Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Very well. How's it going with you?
Good, man. Thank you for asking.
Absolutely.
And my bruiser in the paint, Rajan Walia. How you feeling, man?
Not too bad. Just salivating over that trade deadline.
Oh, already, eh? How far away are we? Like a week?
Yeah, like 10 days or so. Lots of... potential players that are on the market, and just crazy to see that the NBA 10 days from now could be quite different.
Or it'll be the exact same. That's my hot take.
No, there's so many buyers now. So many teams looking to get better. Next Thursday is going to be crazy.
No, man. Watch, it's going to be like the quietest deadline we've had in years.
Just watch. Yeah, we say that every year, but coming up to the deadline, there's going to be a lot more trades than there probably are on the actual deadline day itself.
Who was the... Like, what was a major trade last year? Do you remember? Because I've been trying to think about it, but I couldn't figure it out.
Crickets.
Yeah, that was too long ago.
Oh, man.
All right, it's in the rear view.
What's that?
It's in the rear view, man.
True. Just leave it in the past. Moving forward. We all obviously heard the Woj Twitter notification yesterday that Rich Paul has informed... obviously ESPN and the Pelicans that Anthony Davis wants out of New Orleans. Obviously he wants to go to what they call a competitive slash winning team. And I'm pretty sure we all thought that the Lakers were the first, the first destination in mind in that sense, right? This seems like a big power play from Rich Paul.
Yeah, like I would agree. I think it's kind of been something that was bound to happen sooner or later. Especially with what happened in New Orleans in terms of football and this coming, a week after. It's not been a good week for them. But I think Davis has always been a top NBA player ever since he came out of the draft. And he might be a generational player. And I think his talents are kind of going a little unnoticed with an uncompetitive New Orleans team that's had several years to put together a good core. And I'm not surprised. I won't be surprised if he ends up at the Lakers, as you talked about. But I think he's destined for a bigger market. I think Rich Paul, kind of exactly what LeBron did. Go to a big market, get all that media attention, surround yourself with endorsement opportunities, build your brand, build your name. And Davis is no exception. And I know we can talk about where he could go, but... just the fact that the Lakers need a second star, and who wouldn't want to play in LA with LeBron? There's a lot of players, but...
Wow, shots.
Yeah, just have to sneak that in there, but...
So subtle.
Like, I think he's going to go to LA. The only thing is, does he go before the trade deadline, or is he going in the offseason?
Well, I think the Celtics management is really hoping that he doesn't go by the trade deadline because, you know, they'd be able to get in on it, you know, as of July 1st because of the Rose Rule with Kyrie Irving. But for me, if I'm the Pelicans, I do wait because you're killing your negotiating power by not having Boston in the mix, right? So why would you not just tank the rest of the year, let Davis sit out, and get a really good draft pick? And, come July 1st, once the draft is over with, you can look at possibly trading, you know, maybe even with New York if they get the number one pick in the draft, and they can trade the number one pick with Zion Williamson and maybe a few more players. They just have more, you know, possibilities, I think, come July 1st versus now. And I'm not even sure.
Yeah, basically the Celtics. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I don't really think that they should take the Lakers poo-poo platter.
You don't think so? Ball, Kuzma, Zubac?
Well, the report yesterday already came out that Ball doesn't want to go there, and he wants to go to a team without a point guard that's already established.
I'm amazed that Lonzo Ball has any negotiating power in his second year in the league. Bro, you can relax. Like, chill out. Just shoot like 40% from the line. Shut the fuck up. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, just have the audacity to come out and say it as well. Like, you can think it, but like, to come out and say it, like, you're the smallest piece in this probably whole trade package.
Exactly. Like, who cares what you want? Literally nobody cares. Also, if they trade for you, that means they're going to give you the ball. Let's be real. This guy's just ridiculous.
The funniest thing I saw yesterday was on Twitter. There was like this meme going around where, you know, Lonzo Ball last year, obviously, when the trade rumors came up, he was a guy that was saying, like, you know, he hurt his knee and he needs to get surgery. He might, you know, opt for surgery if he gets traded. And then I saw on Twitter yesterday, like, he's like the guy in Saw that's like trying to, you know, saw his leg off in order not to get traded.
So. Yeah, that's the ultimate power move. Injuring yourself so you don't get traded.
I bet you the rumor is going to be coming out the next week that, like, you know, Lonzo Ball's ankle injury is a lot more severe than first looked at. So
he won't pass that medical.
Anthony Davis's finger is actually a season-ending injury as well.
It might be soon. Because honestly, like, why would you have him play at this point if you're not going to trade him, right? You might as well just sit him out the rest of the year, because if he gets injured, then his trade value goes down.
I think they'll end up playing him until the All-Star break. Let him, like, get as much money as you can on, like, jersey sales and that kind of stuff. And then after that, just sit him. But I agree. Like, I wouldn't trade him until the summer either. Basically, the Celtics and the Lakers are in opposite positions, right? So the Lakers right now have a lot more cachet in terms of, like, a power trade with their plethora of young guys. Whereas the Celtics really just want to push it as long as they can, basically until after the deadline, for them to essentially just swap roles. Where the Lakers' picks will be so much weaker than the Celtics' position is.
Yeah, and I think also Boston offers like options in terms of the players they can provide, whereas in... I think a lot of the players that the Lakers are offering are players that New Orleans kind of has and doesn't really fit a need. And to be honest, I think if Tatum becomes available in trade talks in the summer, I think he's probably going to be one of the better values that New Orleans is going to get. And it also really depends on if Irving re-signs with the Celtics. I think that's something else that... have, like, a lot of us kind of haven't considered, that is if he's going to stay in Boston, because there could be that crazy possibility that he's back in LA with LeBron, because he's all, like, doing all these film productions now, and Davis would, I know, ideally want to play in with LeBron in LA, so there's that possibility that they're forming another super team.
Yo, can anyone actually see that happening?
No.
I can.
Well, Kyrie Irving wanted to get as far away from LeBron as possible 2 years ago and get his own team. Why would he go back to that? There's no, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but then what's this whole purpose of having to apologize to LeBron? And he's obviously invested in himself in terms of, like, doing a lot more film and media production, which is, like, the Mecca is LA. And to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if he was like, you know what? I'd rather be in championship conversation than have my own team.
I think he was only doing that to take a shot at the Celtics young guys. I think that was the only reason he did that.
Yeah. Apparently they're making a documentary about the 16 Cavs as well. So I think this is just part of the play. Just to, like, build up the hype between the two.
Yeah, just to get the camera footage of LeBron looking at his phone. Oh, it's Kyrie. It's been 2 years. Oh my god,
it's Kyrie. It's the kid.
Hmm. What odd timing.
Kyrie's name for him is actually Papa LeBron. Yeah, that'd be weird, man. I can't see that happening either. Like, it wouldn't surprise me, but I would say maybe like a 5-10% chance of it actually happening.
Do you think that Kyrie resigns though? Like,
yeah, I think he does. I think this is the team that he wanted, where he gets to be the star. He has a couple of young guys that he can quote unquote mentor. has Al Horford to hold down the middle and be like the glue guy. And that's it. And then he takes over every fourth quarter like he wants to.
Yeah, but what happens when they get, or if they're in the running for AD and he's like, you know what, like, I can see greener pastures, maybe playing with Kevin Durant somewhere.
Wait, did you say if they don't do get AD or don't?
Like if they're in the contention for him, or their season doesn't end how they want it to, and he decides to pack up and play with Kevin Durant, or would he be okay with kind of giving the keys to the team to AD?
I seriously think that Kyrie just wants to be the guy. So I don't really think he wants to play on a team with somebody who's better than him.
Even if not the guy, at least like a 1A, 1B situation.
No, but he's done that already. Right? I think that he wants to be like the main reason why the team has won the championship, which is why he's comfortable right now, because he's by far the best player on the Celtics. So I think if he went anywhere else, if they won the championship this year, for example, I think that he'd stay, obviously. But you know, if they don't, which is more likely, I think that he might look at a team like New York and try to rebuild his legacy that way, and you know, be the guy that brings New York basketball back, because you know, that would be a huge thing, obviously, in the NBA, since nobody's done it the last 20 years.
So
20.
So if Boston's in the
well, they made the finals before that.
True.
If Boston's in the contention for AD, do you think he stays then? Like, that's kind of what I'm asking.
Yeah, apparently they're like good friends, Kyrie and AD, for some weird reason. There's like a Team USA connection. But the rumors are that they've long talked about playing together and that kind of nonsense. So I could see it happening.
And let's just be honest, Boston has by far the best trade package out of anybody.
Easily.
I mean, they have Jason Tatum. Tatum alone is
the best player involved in any of these trade talks.
Yeah, I mean, they got Jason Tatum and they have a bunch of other teams' picks that they can use. So they don't have to be like LA where they just have, I think they only have their own pick going forward. And then if you have a team that has AD on it, that pick is going to be worthless. So, you know, Boston has the Kings' top one protected pick this year. They have the Grizzlies' pick if it falls outside the top eight for this year. And then they got the Clippers' pick, which is lottery protected. But they have future picks as well. You know, if Memphis' pick doesn't convey this year, it becomes top six. And, you know, they have a lot of options. I think that if they traded, you know, Tatum and parts plus a couple first-round picks, that would obviously get it done.
What kind of parts would you have to set ways with, though? That's the issue, right? Like, AD is still getting paid, what's he at, like 20 to 25 million? Something like that?
I think closer to 25.
Yeah. So Tatum this year will be at 7.8 come the offseason. You know what I mean? There's a lot of like filler in there that you have to figure out just to make any like semblance of a trade actually working out in terms of the salary cap.
Well, I think if you see any type of weird deal that Boston makes for a player with like a medium level salary at the trade deadline that doesn't really fit what they are doing this year, I think you can sort of see the breadcrumbs and see what's going to be happening going forward. I mean, they could trade Marcus Smart too, who's like, you know, making 12, 13 million. I think that's the reason why they re-signed him too. They can use him as part of a deal. And, you know, there's other guys that are making like mid-level type of contracts too on that team. So you package Smart, Tatum, and another guy in the future, you know, a couple draft picks, and I think it would work.
That'd be wild if they traded Smart. He's like, he is the Boston guy. You know what I mean? Apparently he's like the glue or like the veteran that holds everything together. He's their like emotional captain, basically.
Yeah, but for
that's the truth.
But for AD, I think you'd do anything. You'd give up your right leg.
Oh yeah, of course. Or in this case, Marcus Smart's both legs.
As a Raptors fan, I would give up my right leg to see Anthony Davis play with Kawhi on this team.
Yeah. So Josh, let's...
would you also give up Pascal and OG?
Yes.
And,
give them the CN Tower too. Send the CN Tower over there. I don't really care. Do whatever you have to do.
So what's your fantasy situation with this AD and Raps potential trade that you're telling us about?
Well, ideally, you want to keep Serge in the deal because then you wouldn't really have a power forward if you just had AD playing the center position if Serge is a part of the deal. I mean, they would have to play CJ Miles at power forward or Kawhi, I guess, if you really want to go small. But I think it would be, you know, OG, Siakam, and either Serge or JV plus, you know, 2021 first-round pick.
Serge, Siakam, and a 2021 first rounder, which would be like nothing, basically.
No, I mean, if both those guys leave, then that pick would be worth a lot.
Yeah, but that's assuming that they leave. I don't think they would leave.
It depends how they do, right? It depends if they like Toronto.
Yeah, well, after Toronto snowstorm, we'll see. I don't know, man. That's a major stretch. Also, I don't know if they would do it. I don't know if New Orleans would actually take that offer.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough for them to work with.
I'd rather take the Lakers offer at this point, to be honest.
I think Siakam's much better than anything the Lakers have to offer, though. And OG is a good prospect as well.
I think Siakam is better, but also as a result of the system. Right? Like, he's given a lot of space because he has Kawhi and Kyle Lowry on his team. And Serge Ibaka is spreading the floor to the mid-range so that defenders actually leave the paint open.
Yeah, but you're talking about his offense, though, right? His defense is what's truly valuable. He can fit on any team. Like, he's the perfect modern-day four.
Yeah, he's long. He's fast on his feet.
His shooting's okay. He can finish around the basket. Like, he's a super efficient player.
Yeah.
And he's a good passer, too. Like, he's a really good passer, too.
He's okay. Yeah. I wouldn't say really good, but yeah, he's good.
For his position, he's really good.
Yeah. But for AD, man, that's a major stretch. Because they wouldn't want Ibaka's contract either, right?
No, I mean, Ibaka's expiring next year, so I don't think it's a big thing.
No, but it's more just like a useless thing to have for them. Because if they take it on, it's an extra $20 million that they have to take, obviously to make the contracts work. But then you have them for one extra year on top of the rest of this year.
Yeah, I guess if you're making a trade deadline, though, you have to find a team that can give an expiring contract, which I guess is the Lakers because they have KCP. But I mean, they're not going to win anyway going forward, so having Serge on the books another year, I don't think is a big thing.
I have an interesting thought here. I think one thing that the Lakers can offer that probably the Celtics can't, like just with their trade package, is New Orleans has kind of shown over the last 5 to 10 years that they've been pretty satisfied with mediocrity, and they really haven't tanked properly. And obviously with Davis, you can't really, or you don't want to show that player that you're tanking. But I could see that if they end up taking the Lakers package, at least those young guys that they get in the trade, they have like a year and a half to develop them before there's kind of like maybe some expectation for them to start winning again. Whereas if they take Boston's trade package, they're basically forfeiting this half of the season, which is fine. They're probably going to have to wait another year, full year, wait for these players, their draft picks to come, and then wait for them to progress. And that might be like a 4 or 5 year rebuild, which might be better for them in the long run. But based on what they've done in the past and some of the players they have currently, I could see them just kind of saying like, you know what, we'd rather take the players, we'll develop them and hopefully try to win and sneak into the playoffs again. And kind of be that.
Wait. Sneak into the playoffs for when?
Like, they're hoping that's the plan if they can get rid of.
No. I don't think they're that deluded to think that if they trade for Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball, that they're in the playoffs this year. They're already like 7 games out of the playoff picture right now. I mean, either way, no matter what they do, they're going to be on a 5 year rebuild because you lose a, you know, potential top 10 player of all time, like Anthony Davis. Your team is, you know, despite having Drew Holiday as a really good player, your team is just going to go down the chute. It's not a good situation.
No, I think he meant sneak into the playoffs in a few years, not this year.
With those guys? Nah. Nah, B.
Damn. You don't like Brandon Ingram like that?
In the Western Conference with Brandon Ingram as your first or second best player? No. No, thanks.
Yeah, you're right. I don't like him like that either.
I just think that Lakers can offer kind of a bit more of an immediate solution to their woes, even though their woes are like a deep cut.
I don't know. I think I would rather still have the Celtics like proposition if Tatum is involved. Because Tatum might be like one of the best players in a few years, right? So if you actually have him...
I'm not on that bandwagon either.
Yeah, not many people are after his season so far, but talk to anyone last playoff run, he was on top of the world.
Nah. But Boston, I was never a fan.
Yeah.
Yes, you were. Get out of here.
Nope, not with him. I don't see the hype. I don't think he's ever going to be a top 10 player in the NBA.
because you don't have the Mamba mentality.
That's not a good thing for him. It's shown this year. It's not a good thing.
No, it's not.
No, but I mean, like, Boston can offer the best player in the deal by far out of all the teams that are going after him, I think. And they can offer the best trade assets, I mean, yeah, draft assets. So I really don't think it's a competition if they decide to keep him through the trade deadline. So, I mean, as a Raptors fan, I'm hoping that he doesn't go to Boston, obviously. But I also hate the Lakers, so I'm in like a catch 22 situation right now. I hope he goes to Brooklyn.
Yeah, let's trade him for D'Angelo Russell.
I mean, Brooklyn can offer some good players as well. I mean, they're in the mix because they have a big market, obviously, and they have a couple young players they can offer for them. You know, D'Angelo Russell, Jared Allen, maybe a future first-round pick, and maybe one more player off their team. And, you know, it's not a great deal, but at least you're getting two quality young players back who are on rookie-scale deals, right? And then you get future assets with the trade with the draft pick as well, so I think they're in the mix, and then another couple teams like Washington might be able to offer Bradley Beal, and there's not much else beyond that, unfortunately, for them. I mean, almost if Sacramento really want to make a jump, they could trade their young players for him. I'm not really sure that would really work, but, you know, there's some teams out there that if they really wanted to make a splash, they could, you know, trade for Davis now and then try to convince them the next year and a half to stay.
All right, let's move on. Do you guys... So next week, where do you think he'll be?
New Orleans.
Raj?
Yeah, I think he stays.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think they're making a deal before the deadline.
Although if he does go, it's going to be only to the Lakers. If you know what I mean. Like, if he goes, the destination is going to be the Lakers.
Yeah, but
I can see them trying really hard. Like, trying to get a third team involved. I know I mentioned this last time, but I really think they want to win now. And I think they've kind of... tired with Ingram and Ball and having to wait till the offseason to hopefully get a superstar. Like, this is their chance.
Yeah, and as you know, Dell Demps hasn't really shown that he's a good GM, so I think in this situation, as a negotiator, you just have to tell the Lakers, like, you're giving us everything. You're giving us Josh Hart, you're giving us Brandon Ingram, Kuzma, and then if Ball wants to go to a different team, you know, you negotiate with Orlando at that point, or Phoenix, and get him on one of those teams. But they got to give up their entire farm of young players. Or else you just tell them, like, yeah, we're just going to wait till July 1st, and Boston's going to offer us Tatum and two first-round picks. That's what I would do.
I think we've beaten it to a dead horse at this point, man. I'm tired of talking about the Lakers. Somehow, every week, we end up talking about these guys, even though we never want to. I'm just totally fed up with this team. You know what I mean? The Ball effect is so real. Josh, you talked about the Nets earlier, and I want to go back to them. So, obviously, Caris LeVert gets injured first week of the season. Everyone thinks that their season's just going to go down the drain because he was leading the team in points. He was sort of just their leader on the floor. And they've sort of had a nice little winning streak over the past, I don't know, few weeks. Well, not a streak because they just lost yesterday to the Celtics, but over the last 10, they're 7-3. Sitting in sixth place in the East. Can one of you please explain to me how this is happening?
Well, they're 10-3 in the new year, and you know, they have an identity now. I think.
And what
that,
is that?
Well, D'Angelo Russell.
What identity are we talking about here?
D'Angelo Russell's the guy. They play fast, and everyone who comes in, they've had a lot of injuries this year, so they've had a. You know, their depth is actually really good. I mean, they've had, you know, Jared Dudley play 25 minutes a game as a starter through stretches of the year. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is supposed to be the starter for them in the power forward position, but he's been injured pretty much the entire year. But everyone they fit in on the wing especially has come in. You know, they know what they have to do. They've done their job. And defensively, they've been okay the last 2 months. So it's just a matter of, like, their guards... they're sort of playing like the money ball type of offense in the NBA right now, where like you shoot a ton of threes or you get to the rim, there's nothing in between. So they're playing like the Houston Rockets sort of style. But everyone knows where to be on the floor. It's sort of like, you know, sort of like what Milwaukee does now with having those squares on the court in certain positions where players have to be in those spots in order to create the best type of spacing, right? I think that Brooklyn's doing the same sort of thing and just running high pick and roll every single play and just getting the best shot out of it. So... I think, you know, like I said, the players just know where to be on the court, and whoever comes in has contributed, and I think that has to, you know, has a lot to do with their coaching and Kenny Atkinson, the job that he's done.
Yeah, I think the impressive thing with the Nets is since December 7th, after a big win against Toronto at home, they've only lost maybe five games. Like they lost to Indiana. The only blemish is really they lost to Charlotte. Besides that, they lost to Milwaukee, Boston away, again to Toronto away, and to Boston again away. And those are all teams that are just better than them in the Eastern Conference. But besides that, they've beaten some pretty good opposition, and they've also beaten kind of the lowlifes of the NBA, like the Atlantas, the Knicks. And I think kind of the impressive thing with them is, as Josh mentioned, like they have injuries, but a lot of their players are can play kind of interchangeably. And I think another thing for them is they have kind of the benefit of Indiana kind of losing Depot. They can probably snap up the fifth seed in the NBA as long as Spencer Dinwiddie comes back relatively healthy and they continue to play like this. But I think they're kind of a surprise in the NBA just how well they've played. And I think they're a team on the rise in the East.
So you mentioned there that they've beaten up on teams like Atlanta, Chicago. Basically, most of their wins since, like you said, December 7th have been against the lower tier of the NBA, right? Charlotte, obviously thrown in there. The only major wins that they've had against like good teams, in a sense, are Houston. Let's say that one Boston game that they had, and that's about it.
And
You know what I
Philly.
mean? Oh, and Philly.
They beat
Yeah,
Philly a
you're
month
right.
ago, but at the end of the day, like they've also beat, I'd say, a Sacramento team that plays a very similar style to them. And they just push the ball up the court. And they beat them pretty handedly. And I think at the end of the day, like these are teams that Brooklyn was losing to last year and the year before. So like it's just kind of refreshing and to see that they've kind of established themselves in the East. They're not really quite the cream of the crop, but they're above the teams like Miami and Detroit that have kind of just like yo-yoing throughout the season.
Yeah, that's true. Oh man, Detroit. Such losers. Do you think these guys make a trade at the deadline? Aside from our Anthony Davis rumors?
Maybe a minor deal because they have so many guys on their bench that, need minutes. I think once they get healthy, they have like five or seven power forwards, it seems like, or small forwards. So I think that they're probably just going to stand pat and wait for LeVert to get back, hopefully in March or April, and then make a playoff push. And then in the offseason, that's when you look at trying to bring in a big star and pairing them with. I'm not really sure what they're going to do to Russell because he's a free agent coming up. But I think that
Let
you.
him go.
I would. I mean,
Let
he's had
his
a good
ass
year and
go.
everything, but you can get away with playing Spencer Dinwiddie at the one if you can bring in a big star, make a trade, or sign and trade with D'Angelo Russell.
Actually, the two of them complement each other really well. You know what I mean? I think Dinwiddie as a sort of as like a 1A, 1B with Russell actually works just because defenses have to go towards both of them, right? And having Dinwiddie control the ball actually controls Russell more because he can't just be a chucker either. So I'm more interested to see how their team does like in the next couple of weeks without Dinwiddie around. I want to see how like how crazy Russell gets with his shot attempts or the kind of ball that he plays.
Yeah, and I mean, they had one of the best value contracts in the offseason with Joe Harris on a 2-year, I think, $17 million deal. And he's been one of the best 3-point shooters in the NBA on high volume, too. So that's been a big factor in why they've continued to win because he's been super consistent the entire year. He's the new J.J. Redick.
Wow. Damn. I think they're also like their injuries are coming not all at the same time. You know what I mean? So at the beginning of the year, they didn't have guys like Damari Carroll, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson was hurt, Ed Davis missed a lot of time at the beginning of the year. And now it's the exact opposite, right? Like Carroll's back while LeVert and Dinwiddie are out. Or like Allen Crabbe, not Allen Crabbe, but Hollis Jefferson is finally back too, and like somewhat consistently back. So
I think
it's
that's
not like all
also,
the.
yeah, I think
Sorry,
it's
what?
also like one factor where, Allen Crabbe being out of the lineup has really helped them because he's been absolute trash the last 2 years. So I think filling in his spot with Joe Harris getting more minutes and shooting 46% from the 3-point line. And then again, the revolving door of injuries has caused them to play a guy like Rodions Kurucs in the starting lineup, and he's played really well as a
Yeah.
rookie.
Rodion's nice. He's got much potential.
Their announcers keep referring to him as a guy that sort of plays like Kirilenko. I don't really see it on the defensive end yet, but he's a good playmaker for his size, and he shot the ball really well from the three-point line. He looks like Kirilenko, though, in terms of his stature.
No, he literally is like a wax figure of him.
Yeah.
It's weird. Do you want to show Kenny Atkinson any love here before we leave the Nets? He's done a pretty good job making sure everyone knows their role. The defense actually looks like on point. Like the rotations are quick. Everyone knows where to be. It's looking good.
Yeah, and then going back to the Moneyball thing, I think that they're allowing the least amount of three-pointers taken, or they're in the top or the bottom three with that. So they're playing the analytics game and trying to limit three-point shots and shooting as many as they can on offense. So I think once they get a star player, that might change a little bit and, you know, forming their systems around that type of player. But hopefully it's not a guy like Jimmy Butler, because I don't want to see him go there and just ruin what they have.
Yo, can you not throw shots at Jimmy Butler in every episode? Like, come on, man.
I got to get one shot in an episode. That's my quota.
Jesus.
At this rate, it's he's going to come and ruin the Raptors for you, Josh. Just in your nightmares.
That would be so funny. I would love that.
I'm so glad they didn't trade for him.
I wonder if they were ever in the running for him.
I'm guessing they probably made some inquiries. Just like Masai is going to make some inquiries with Davis, too.
I think everyone makes inquiries, but how serious are they? You know what I mean? That's the issue. Like, how much was Masai calling Thibodeau at the time? Was it just once, or was it, like, daily?
I think Masai would trade his mother in order to get a better chance of winning the championship this year.
That's pretty crazy, man. I don't know what to say to that. That's just weird.
He's a type that will do whatever it takes to create a winning team, and especially a team that can get to the finals. That's the one thing that's alluded. He's made a bunch of great moves with Denver and now with Toronto, but you know, getting to the finals has been something that's eluded him, so hopefully this year that changes.
Yeah, sure. They can meet Golden State there, because Golden State is just on the way now that Boogie's back.
Boogie.
Yeah, Boogie's back, and he's playing really well so far in the five games that he has played, and he's got some juice. He's got some spring in his step. He's had a few dunks too. A couple hard dunks in the lane.
A few dunks. He's like 7 feet tall. He's had a couple of dunks, you know.
No, but like even on those dunks, he's actually getting some elevation, whereas like, you know, before he was more, you know, plotting type of player where a lot of his dunks, it looked like he barely even got over top of the rim, but he's looked pretty athletic since he's come back.
He looks thin. Like, he looks a lot more in shape than anyone that was expecting him to be. You know what I mean? Like, what was it, an Achilles injury that he had?
Yeah, he tore his Achilles tendon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for someone who tore their Achilles, man, he looks like he's in great shape.
And he looks like he's having fun. Like, I know that Boogie's one of the better personalities in the NBA, but I think just with a team like Golden State, like, he's just happy to get his touches. Like, he's shooting well, too. That's kind of, for me, the most surprising thing, just to get your shot going in rhythm in the NBA. Sometimes it takes a few games, and he's had a few games where maybe his shooting wasn't the best, but he's still shooting at least 45% from the field, I believe, and he's shooting the three well. And I think with him on the team, just the Warriors look absolutely unbeatable.
Yeah, I think so far he's 5 for 10 from the three-point line. And he's just fit in seamlessly to their offense. Like, he's not trying to force too much. When he gets the ball in the post, he's actually looking for the players off the split cuts with, you know, Thompson and Curry. He's had a bunch of, like, backdoor assists to Thompson. And Thompson has, you know, benefited the most from anybody because, you know, Boogie sets those massive screens at the top of the key. And that's getting Klay wide open for, you know, off-the-dribble three-point shots or curls. And, you know, his percentages have gone way up since Boogie has, you know, come back. So that, I think that's a big thing with them, is that his screen setting has been massive for those players because it gives them so much more space. And you can't double team them because then Boogie's rolling down the lane and he's, you know, throwing down dunks where he gets 2 feet off the ground. But, you know, it's okay. He's done sweet for them pretty well so far.
I mean, 2 feet is better than 0 feet. So
he barely gets over that phone book.
Hey, as long as you're over it.
Also, just to add on with Golden State as well, the fact that now they have two players that can play the center effectively, like Looney and DeMarcus, obviously DeMarcus being the huge upgrade. I just think that their one weakness, their lack of depth at center, which maybe forced them to play small if they got an early foul trouble with Looney, kind of that has been papered over, cracked, sealed. It looks pretty much as good as any Warriors team we've seen in the last 4 years.
Yeah, and one other thing is Iguodala's played really well recently too. So all that talk earlier in the season with people saying that he was washed now because he was averaging like 2 points a game in like 20 minutes, that's just a bunch of nonsense. Iguodala's doing the Robert Horry thing where he just like rests the entire regular season for the most part, then steps it up in the playoffs and plays 30 minutes a game. And going back to the Boston game that they played against Golden State recently where they won by 4 points, I think that's indicative of how Golden State's going to use their rotation, that Boogie will get like 24 to 26 minutes per game in the playoffs, and then you'll see the death lineup with Iguodala in and then Draymond at center when they play teams that have a stretch center like Horford.
The issue is that the West is only going to be, like, you can easily play small in the West, right? If you look at the contenders, you've got Denver, Jokic. He's not going to like body people inside that often.
And I don't know about that. Jokic has had some success against Golden State.
So that's when you're going to need DeMarcus, right?
Yeah.
And then OKC, obviously Steven Adams will be an issue. But a team like Houston, not really a big deal.
No, I think Houston's a huge deal because you just have Harden attacking Cousins every play.
No, that's what I mean. You don't need to play Cousins that much at that point. You can just have Draymond in there instead.
True.
You know what I mean? So then you have, like, who else is actually a real contender in the West right now?
Well, like, just not even in terms of contender, just like a possible matchup. Like, Nurkic for Portland, I would put Boogie in there just because I think he matches up well.
I don't even think that's a big deal. I wouldn't mind Draymond there.
Yeah, you don't really mind Nurkic posting up Draymond, so.
Yeah, because his hands aren't that good. Draymond can easily poke that ball out.
Or break his hand like he did with JV.
It's not his fault that JV has soft hands, okay?
When having soft hands is a bad thing, by Peter Tran.
The memoir. Yeah, but look at other teams. Utah has to play DeMarcus. Spurs, I'm not really concerned about the Spurs, to be honest. Like, of the potential matchups, I mean, they can split their time very easily between DeMarcus and Draymond, right?
And you know, although this doesn't even matter. Golden State's going to win the championship regardless.
I thought you said Toronto's going to win.
No, I said Toronto's going to make the finals and then maybe give Golden State a run, but it's hard to see them winning. Unless they get AD, of course, then we're going to take down Golden State.
Even then, I think Golden State's just too good.
Nah. Kawhi and AD are the biggest Golden State killers in the NBA. So you get those two together, we're going to win by 10 every game.
Also, Cat. Cat always kills them.
True.
But you're naming a lot of guys who always just beat them up inside.
And I
right? They've never had a real big like DeMarcus before.
And I'm also going to say the fact is we're looking at players that have played well, like statistically, but have they actually gotten like wins? Obviously, Kawhi's played them well, but this team with Kevin Durant and Boogie, don't think so.
Hey, Kawhi was one ankle injury away from taking down Golden State a couple years ago.
In one game. Oh, my God.
Hey, man, the series might have gone in a whole different direction if they won game one.
Yeah, just like the 0-1 Sixers won one game. That series went totally different than what everyone thought it was going to be.
They didn't have Kawhi Leonard.
Like, come on, man. Relax. Like, I love Kawhi, but there was no way the Spurs were going to win that series.
They would have won at least two games, though.
You think so? I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. There's no way that Golden State, you know, does a gentleman's sweep after they lose game one by 30.
Yeah, I guess. Did they end up losing that game?
They did.
Was it close at the end?
Yeah, I mean, Golden State, they were down 25 points, I think, once Kawhi went down, and then they came all the way back and won in the fourth quarter, obviously.
Yeah, because he got injured in the second half, right?
Yeah, he got injured in the early third quarter. He had 27 or 29 points at that point. Like, he was destroying Golden State.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. whatever. Golden State's going to win it, like we all predicted. Boogie's fitting in perfectly, like we all thought that he would. He's actually having fun, which obviously we all know is a major issue for him because he never has fun anywhere he goes in life, apparently. Yeah. I mean, get that paycheck next year, Boogie. Took a massive pay cut this year to go, so go get your chip. Go get paid next year. Have fun. How sick would it be if the Lakers got AD and the brow next year? With LeBron.
You just said AD and the brow.
No, I meant AD and Boogie. My bad.
I think...
A reunion of sorts.
Yeah, I think that would be crazy. It'd be completely kind of the opposite of the way the NBA is going, like establishing your team with players that like to play going to the rim instead of teams that have a bunch of three-point shooters. I think it'd be entertaining to watch because you have personalities on that team. But I still think the way Golden State's set up, like, this is probably going to be one of the best NBA teams ever. And I don't see a path where they don't win.
Yeah.
Even it's, even one injury to one of their starting five. Like, I don't see a path. Like, even if Kevin Durant gets hurt, I think the path will become a lot harder, but I think they can still win.
Yeah. I mean, June might be really boring for us again. The Raptors might get swept, Josh.
Nah.
You're talking about April then.
So, wow. Harsh.
Relax.
Yeah, let's move on to Stats Corner.
All right, so with Stats Corner this week, we're going to talk about something that's sort of become null and void almost in the NBA, which is mid-range shooting. So can you name the top five mid-range shooters by percentage in the NBA this year?
Teams or players?
Players.
Oh, LaMarcus?
LaMarcus is not in the top five.
What?
DeMar.
Oh, come on, man.
What was that?
DeMar.
No, get out of here. DeMar DeRozan.
Oh, we're not talking about attempts. We're talking about percentage.
Yes.
Ooh.
Okay, okay. Just making sure.
Oh, Serge.
Serge is actually sixth.
Oh, wow.
DeMar is shooting like 39.8% from mid-range, which is out of the top 20 at least.
What's Serge shooting?
Serge from mid-range is shooting 51%, which is fantastic.
Damn, that's amazing. Give me my boy Rudy Gay.
Rudy Gay is actually in the top 10. He is number 8 overall, 50.4%.
Yeah, that guy never misses, man. Mid-range jumpers all day.
Yeah, he's been great, too. He's coming back from the Achilles tear, too. So now you have two guys with success stories with him and Boogie.
Ooh, baby. Mid-rangers. Let's see.
The guy at number one, you're never going to get. But the other four, I think you probably can. These guys take a high volume, too.
What?
All these guys take a pretty high volume, except for one of these guys. We've talked about... I'll give you a hint for Boston.
Marcus Morris?
No. he's done really well from the three-point line, but not so much from mid-range.
Who do they have shooting mid-range? Like Horford?
Yeah. Horford's number two at 54%.
Okay, okay. Raj, you got anything?
I'm thinking mid-range.
How about your boy Bradley Beal?
He's more of a three.
Yeah, Bradley Beal is not in the top 30.
Wow, this is a tough one. CJ McCollum.
Yes, CJ is number 3 at 51.7%.
Ooh, that's nice.
So who's one of the best scorers in the NBA that takes a majority of his shots in the mid-range?
Giannis?
What?
He doesn't shoot.
We're talking about percentage here.
Not dunks.
Yeah, we're not talking about in the paint.
Steph Curry?
No, Steph Curry is not on the list here.
One of the best scorers?
Yes.
Like this year?
Mm-hmm.
Let me check this.
Klay?
Nope. Klay's been actually really bad for mid-range thus far this year.
Well, he's been shooting.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Kawhi?
Nope. Kawhi is not in the top 10, surprisingly. Wow. I think he's just outside the top 10. I think he's 13th at 47%.
Cupcakes.
That is correct. Kevin Durant at number 5, 51% on the highest volume out of anybody by far.
He really loves a mid-range, eh?
He's great at it, too.
I guess all of his pull-ups are from there instead of the three.
That's why he's better in the playoffs than James Harden, because he has more weapons at his disposal besides just going to the rim or shooting a stupid step-back three.
Okay. All right. How many do we have left? Two?
You got two left. One of them is somewhat obvious. He's on one of the better teams in the NBA. And this play is basically unguardable when they run the little dribble handoff on their team.
Oh, Redick?
Yeah, Redick is number 4 at 51.4%.
Oh, that Embiid Redick DHO is perfect, man. Yeah, Embiid's so big.
Oh, yeah.
Big comes up to contest Redick, and, you know, yeah, Embiid has a wide open dunk, and if he doesn't, JJ has a little, you know, mid-range shot. It's wide open every time.
Yep.
And the other guy, who's number 1 right now, is on JJ Redick's team. So who shoots a lot of, well, not a lot, but a decent amount of mid-range shots on Philadelphia that is actually good at them? And it's not
Ben, I was gonna say it's Butler. Not Ben Simmons. I was going to say Butler.
Nope, it's not Butler.
Ben Simmons, huh? Still.
Right?
TJ McConnell?
That's correct. TJ is number 1 at 56%.
Jeez.
He's had a surprisingly good year, too.
What's his number?
56%.
Oh my god, what the hell?
How many attempts? Like 3?
Now he's at 78 field goals attempted from the mid-range.
Ah, I see.
Horford's at 79, so not too many, but still qualifies.
Fine, yeah, sure. TJ McConnell. Wow, okay.
Now going into the bottom 5 mid-range shooters in the NBA, some guys that you'll be somewhat surprised by. So the worst mid-range shooter who qualifies in the NBA this year is Kevin Knox in New York. And second worst is Trae Young at 27% from the mid-range, which is just awful. One guy who's changed his game completely and that's gone to the more, you know, money ball system is Blake Griffin. He's at 28.9% from mid-range.
That's a bit shocking.
Remember when it was just always him pick and pop with Chris Paul?
From the elbow.
Yeah, and it seemed like he was automatic.
Yeah.
But he's not shooting as many now. He's just posting up or he's shooting 3.
And he's also a point guard.
That too. Point Blake.
He's essentially a team on his own.
And beyond him, you got Dwayne Wade, surprisingly, which is something you never expect, at 29.6%. And to round out the bottom 5, Harrison Barnes at 31%.
That's not surprising.
And in the bottom 10, of course, you have Andrew Wiggins at 32% and Russell Westbrook at 32%. So
that's fine. As long as Butler's not there, we're good. All right, what else you got?
Just one more thing. We're going to go over teams' clutch rating in terms of offense. So who are the best offensive teams in the clutch this season?
Well, Denver.
Denver is not in terms of offense. Ooh. They are 12th.
Denver also has the best winning percentage in clutch situations. I'm just saying.
Their defense is really good.
Yeah. I mean, defense wins games, you know?
They're 4th in defense in the clutch.
All right. Pursue.
Peter, you said Denver with so much conviction.
It's because they win in the clutch, okay?
Yeah, that's
the doing it differently this year.
You know what happens? They build big leads, and then they just let the other team get back into it, and their defense just holds on just enough. It's actually really frustrating to watch. Because it's like so anxiety-driven now. I hate it. But it's also so fun.
Hey, last year they were losing all those games, so something's working.
Yeah, true. So efficient teams in the clutch?
Offensively.
Golden State?
Golden State is not in the top 10. They are actually 19th. Wow. They've struggled a little bit.
They're not in the clutch very often.
That too.
What about Boston?
Boston's number 1 at 131 offensive rating thus far.
Yo, do you guys think Kyrie is the best clutch player in the league?
According to this, he is.
Yeah, I could.
According to you. I don't, like, aside from the stats.
In terms of a guy I want the ball in his hands with, I think that he's up there. I think him, Curry, maybe KD. So far, after seeing what he did with the game of Toronto, it's hard to say that he hasn't been the most clutch player this season so far.
Yeah, he's a bad dude, man.
And even at the end of the game against Golden State, which they lost, he was playing really well.
Yeah. Like I said, he carries that team in the fourth.
He's having the best year of his career, especially decision-making-wise, too.
Yep. So going to get paid next year.
Well, he's getting the max contract no matter what, as long as he doesn't get injured.
Yeah. But he's got a player option for this year, though, is what I mean. Do you opt into it if you were him?
No.
You don't think so?
No, he can make more money if he opts out.
That's true. Yeah, it's only 21. He could easily make like 30.
I mean, he could go to LeBron route where he just takes a one-year contract every year until he gets to the 10 years where he can sign a super, super max, so that's an option.
The only issue is he's injury prone. But back to your stats, I want to say... Houston?
Houston's number 7.
Okay.
Toronto.
No.
Toronto's number 11.
Okay, Raj, relax.
Have you seen their offense in end of quarter or end of game situations?
I've seen Kawhi hit some big shots, you know?
Yeah, I've also seen them air ball and get turnovers. And,
oh, man.
Well, how about the Kings?
The Kings are nowhere near. They're 15th.
Yeah. Oh, OKC.
No, OKC's not in the top 10. They are 17th.
Damn. Even with Paul George's season?
OKC wins with defense.
What about Dallas?
Dallas surprisingly is in the bottom 5.
Oh, Luka.
I don't think that's surprising.
Luka's had his moments,
one of the worst
obviously.
Teams in the West, man.
No, but Luka's had his moments, but overall, I think defensively, they just can't guard anybody, so that doesn't help, you know. You have to take the ball out of your basket every single time and run a half-court offense instead of, you know, playing with tempo and pace.
Give me Philly.
Philly is 20th.
We're struggling at this.
God, yo, we suck at this. Who do we have so far?
You have Boston.
Okay. What about the Spurs?
No, the Spurs are 10th.
Ugh.
Two of these teams are trash. So they score a lot of points, but they also give up a lot of points.
In close games.
But they have two clutch players on their team, so. Or one clutch player each, I should say.
Washington.
Yeah, they're number 4.
Although I don't think Bradley Beal is that clutch.
I like Bradley Beal.
Yeah, he can't hit free throws in the fourth.
Are we talking about LeBron here or Bradley Beal?
Bradley from St. Louis Beal, my friend. Milwaukee
is 8th.
Oh, no kidding.
Portland?
Portland's not in the top 15. They are 18th.
Jeez. Yo, we are trash at this one. All
right, I'm going to throw in the white flag.
So, Indiana is 2nd, which is definitely not going to last, you know, with that rating. So, they're actually 15-7 in the clutch, which I think is the best winning percentage overall. And
I beg to differ.
What do you mean?
I think Denver's is better.
No, Denver is... They're 20-8 in the clutch, so I guess percentage-wise, yes. They are.
Exactly.
They've had more clutch opportunities. Which is good for the playoffs, because that'll definitely help having that experience going in. The Clippers are 3rd best. And the last team is the Pistons. So Blake has done well in the clutch, even though they haven't won as many games as they, you know, probably should have.
Blake or Reggie Jackson?
Definitely not Reggie Jackson. You're not going to see him interviewed after the game, that's for sure.
Nah. All right, I just want to finish off with the stat. I want to get in on this. So we already said that Denver's at the top. Indiana's in the top 5 for clutch percentage wins. Who else do you guys have rounding out the top 5?
Clutch percentage wins. All right, so it has to be a team that wins.
Yeah. I don't care about your offense because, you know, no one can run up the floor. But I want Dubs. Josh, do you already know these? Have you already looked at this?
I reviewed it, so I'm not going to say anything.
Oh. Oh, no, don't let me suffer here, Josh.
Raj, look at your favorite team in the West. Well, that's not Memphis.
Golden State?
No. Your favorite team.
Okay.
Your favorite team to watch.
Well, this is the Kings.
Yes, number 5.
Oof. All right, I see.
17 and 10.
Yeah, they've been in a lot of close games, and they push the ball up the court, so they're just kind of outgunning some teams. Yeah.
Second on this is had one of the biggest trades this year. I'd say the biggest trade so
Philadelphia.
Far. Philadelphia. Yeah. 18 and 8 in clutch situations.
That's not bad, considering they didn't have a closer until they got
exactly. Exactly. And then Milwaukee? The fourth team in this. Yeah. Good guess. 15 and 8.
Yeah. And then the Raps.
No, Sacramento is fifth.
Oh, okay.
Raps are 8 at 14 and 10.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. And surprisingly, Boston is 14 and 11. I think that's going to go up, though, because Kyrie's been on loop.
Yeah, they just had a bad start to the year where like they didn't really know who to go to, or they were just moving the ball around instead of just putting the ball in Kyrie's hands.
Yeah, when they thought Jason Tatum could win them games. Alas, my man did not win them games. No, sir.
He trash.
Relax.
The most overrated player in the NBA right now.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, yeah. That's food for thought. I gotta look at these guys some more. That's a crazy take. Holy.
Better end it on
We'll bring it up next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. All right, guys. Good podcast today. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Leave us some reviews, obviously, on iTunes, where you can find us on Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, basically all the major platforms. Obviously on Twitter and Instagram at Stretch4Pod. Until next time, peace.